Corky Siegel, how would you describe what you're doing with the Chamber Blues?
The fact is you can't, because one of the reasons that I'm doing something like this is because you really can't compare it so much to anything else. Okay, so I'll describe it. What it is technically, it's a juxtaposition of blues and classical, where the special elements of classical maintain their character and the compositional effects of the blues style maintain their characteristics. So you could hear the blues and classical happening compositionally at the same time, and you can hear how they complement each other. That's sort of the mission of chamber blues, to do that. And, you know, it's something I've been doing since the 60s, really, with symphony orchestras. And the symphony just couldn't fit in the bus, so I thought I would do it with a small chamber group. Now, I could explain a little bit further. So in more in musical terms, how would you write a composition where it's both classical and blues at the same time? And there's many ways, and there's many mathematical ways. One way is to use a classical ostinato, like doon 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 doon, and then have a blues improvisation on top of that. So that's pretty much a no-brainer. That's simple. Or you could have a blues ostinato, like doon 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 doon, and have classical compositional thing on top of that. So you've already done two examples of how blues and classical could work together at the same time, maintaining their characters and yet complementing each other. Of course, there's a million possibilities. And so that's basically chamber blues. String quartet, East Indian tabla, blues harmonica, blues piano, sometimes vocals. And then to make a transition into Michael Miles being here, as an orchestra, you know, a six-piece orchestra with a string quartet, we have guest artists. And sometimes I will do the arrangements for the guest artists, and they'll be based on this principle of blues and classical plus whatever else that other artist is bringing in. Or the artist will bring in their own compositions. And in the case of Michael Miles on banjo, this is what he has done.
I was struck by the fact that we're talking Bach and B.B. King. And Michael Miles, you, not necessarily being a part of chamber blues as such, maybe as a guest, but you recorded Bach. And again, that's something else that I think, like harmonica and with banjo, it's not the first thing people think about. Do you feel that gives you some entry point into what Corky's doing when you work with him, that you found something in the classical realm or Bach?
The world needs categorization of classical music and jazz music and blues and folk. But ultimately, it all comes down to rhythm and melody. And so if you can hear what it is you want to play, it doesn't really matter what style it is. And so Corky does this fantastic, the sound of the string quartet is so beautiful. And why not have a harmonica in there? Because the sound of the harmonica can be incredibly beautiful as well. And the banjo, not known for beauty, actually can have a certain elegance itself. Most people don't. You don't have many examples of hearing this. You know, like what we're talking about is pushing boundaries aside, but that's what we're able to envision and then have the good fortune of finding people who can join us in those visions to create altogether new sounds.
What was it for you to decide that, yes, I play the banjo, but I want to play Bach?
Yeah. Well, thank you for the question. My answer to that is that we as musicians are the sum of what we've heard. And so the more you listen to, the richer you get. And I grew up in Chicago, and I grew up listening to my father. He was a blue-collar guy, and he worked for the electric company, but he bought himself a player piano, and he'd come home from work, and he would sit at the player piano and sing show tunes, you know. And so that was kind of the soundtrack in my house. And I've always liked the sound. I've always listened to classical music. I've listened to folk music. I listened to rock and roll. I enjoyed hearing the Beatles' 50th anniversary. And I find myself with a banjo in hand and find there are ways that it's some uncharted territory, and it excites me that it's somewhat uncharted, that people haven't tried it that much. A lot of people who are drawn to the banjo are drawn in through the sound of the Beverly Hillbillies, bluegrass, old-time music, and they stay there. And I've just heard that these instruments are capable of doing more based on the things that I've listened to and enjoyed listening to.
Well, let's follow that line a little bit. When you're working with Corky, something new there? Because, again, you approached composers like Bach on your own as well as other mm-hmm. influences, but then you're thrown in with Corky, who's coming from his direction of looking at classical and blues and different genres
right.
together. So does it mesh? Does it fit? Do you find something? Is there something new in there? Or is it someone over here standing next to someone over there?
Well, it's solving the riddle. How can it work? And if it does work, what can we do then to make it better? And that's what makes the day interesting, you know, and that we can find a common ground. We have some common history, common knowledge about music information, and that can be shared. But ultimately, it's listening and being aware of the sounds and the other players who are around you and finding how best to make that meld together. That's how it works.
Corky, you want to kind of talk about that and maybe on to the next thing, which is conveying that to an audience who may have preconceptions or may have no idea what they're going to hear.
Let me handle that second because it's a great question. It's perfect for the project, too. You know, first of all, let me just say that in my understanding is that everything works in music. Everything really works. It works. We think things aren't going to work. When people hear chamber blues, they think it's not going to work. Because when they think of blues, they think of a guy in an old T-shirt, blue jeans on an old guitar, you know, in a club. And they think of classical. They think of an ornate concert hall with a piano on high stick and people in sequins gowns and tuxedos. And music doesn't know what people are wearing, first of all. So we've superimposed that image on there and made it seem like worlds apart. Further, we call maybe symphonic music square and blues hip. But music doesn't know about these words. You know, it doesn't know what sophisticated is or primitive. So when you erase all those words and you just look at the music form, truly almost all music is the same and can work very well. Now, there are some forms of music, maybe Indian music, which uses a little bit of a different scale, different concept, blues, which uses a different scale. For a composer, those are amazing gifts because you're allowed now to write something fresh simply because this territory hasn't been explored too much without having to stress over it. Because there it is. Here's this little, you know, approach to a scale in blues, very melodic concept. All the instruments in blues play a melodic phrase. In classical, everything could be analyzed vertically. So what is happening with all the instruments at one time and what do they all do next? There are two different ways of looking at music and analyzing it. Also, there's a little bit of a different performance style, which is completely elective. You could apply a blues performance style to classical, which some people do, like Yo-Yo Ma and other people like that. You know, so the only thing that's really different is a slight difference in scale, which allows an incredible amount of creativity and the ability to do something that's very, very fresh by juxtaposing these two forms. But most crossover music is simply a unique instrument playing classical music, or a unique instrument that's usually plays classical, plays non-classical, but bringing one element and another and having them work at the same time is something that hasn't been done a whole lot. Even Gershwin didn't do that. And whose idea was it? Because you talked about how did I come up with the idea. I didn't come up with the idea. It wasn't my idea. And I like saying, neither was it my idea nor my fault. In the 60s, I came out of playing with Howlin' Wolf and Muddy Waters and all the blues masters. And then the moment I'm in playing in Big John's, and there's this guy that came in night after night after night who was a major fan of the Cecil Schwal band. And one night he comes up to me and he said, "Hey, Corky, I'd like your band to jam with my band." I ask him, "Who's your band?" And he says, "The Chicago Symphony." As it turns out, he was Maestro Seiji Ozawa. And so William Russo wrote a piece for us. We premiered it in 1968 with the Chicago Symphony, a juxtaposition of blues and classical. It was a major hit. As a matter of fact, I just heard that it was voted as one of the top 100 classical works that are considered to be the most important classical works to ever be recorded in history. And so then that piece just won the award. That was the first. It wasn't my idea. Seiji Ozawa felt that classical music needed a little spark and thought blues was that spark, and he won. So I went and toured with Seiji and recorded that record, which was Deutsche Grammophon's biggest seller. And then we went on to the New York Philharmonic and the Boston Symphony with invitations all over the world. I mean, that's how I got started. And Sage used to say to me, you must pursue this, you must pursue this. And I really wasn't interested, but it pursued me. And eventually I was asked to write, you know, symphonic compositions. I wrote for the San Francisco Symphony and the National Symphony. I'm starting to, and people are saying, wow, we've never heard anything like this before. Could you write more of it? And my answer was no. You know, it took a year to write this one piece. So I ended up, chamber blues was a simpler way of approaching it, string quartet.
But it's been quite a while since that time in the 60s, and you've continued to pursue this, mm-hmm. and you're doing collaborations. So apparently, at least both of you, you must find that there's something still interesting, still fresh to do.
Yeah. For me, you know, Michael is really taken on something really amazing, and I really love the stuff he does, and he's working with orchestras and chamber groups, and, you know, he's really, like, cranking out the material and writing stuff and getting people to collaborate with him. So he's totally in that world. And to me, you know, it's something, not that I have a whole lot of the rest of my life left. I'm 70. But I will continue pursuing this territory that, again, has hardly been scratched. You know, so there's tons and tons and tons of work to do in this area. So that's where I'm at about it. And by the way, I absolutely love it. And to answer your question about audiences, I honestly don't worry about audiences. If I worried about audiences, I wouldn't have written Chamber Blues in the first place. I wouldn't have taken on that project. When I wrote Chamber Blues and we were ready to perform it, I thought everyone was going to hate it. And I thought the critics, you know, would see this big target on my back. So I wrote it for me. You know, I wrote it, what is going to hold my interest? What's going to make me happy? And I believe that's the secret for any artist, is to find out who they are, what they have to offer, and offer that. Because if you offer anything other than that, you're not offering your best. You're trying to project maybe what someone else would like. You're trying to project what someone else might do. But what we really want to do as artists is dig deep and find out who we are and what we have to offer and what we connect with. Because in that way, when we do our work, we're connected to it in a very, very deep way. And so the audiences are the last thing we think about. But we know the best we can do for the audience is connecting with ourselves as an artist as deeply as possible.
I would just add to that that it makes the, you know, makes the day better. The world is so chaotic and so cruel, and yet for us, we're so fortunate to have this as an ingredient in our lives. And so, of course, this is what we want to do, because it is who we are and it is what we do. And for those reasons that Corky so beautifully articulated, this is what makes the day worthwhile. You know, and to have, you know, with Corky creating this corridor that is his own, even though it wasn't his idea, he has this space where he does bring this incredible passion and all this inventiveness and incredible musicality. And that makes the world go around, makes his world go around, and makes my world go around when I get to, you know, make the music that I do as well. And how fortunate are we that that is the case?